Welcome, everybody, to Langtime Chat, episode 60.
Indeed. Yes. Yay!
Jesse says this marks 5 years of podcasts.
Well, it's ending, like, 60 is the last, and then 61 will be the start of a new year. So, yes, it wraps up 5 years.
The fifth one or the sixth one?
Like, it'll start? Well, I mean, 60 represents 5 years, 12 months. And so, yes, it'll be the start of a sixth one.
You know, in base 60, 60 is only 60. No, actually, in base 60, 60 is 100, isn't it? No, it's 10.
10, yeah.
Yeah, it's 10. It's 10. So, welcome to episode 10. I have started recording this episode without telling Jesse what we are going to do, because it is a rather nebulous thing. But it is now February 4th. Our podcasts are set to come out on the first of every month for our patrons. And the first came and went with no podcast.
Which is not surprising, given the fact that we were incredibly busy and not in ideal circumstances to not only be able to record, but to be able to upload things. And so, but we're back. And I think our patrons knew that the end of January / start of this month was going to be a little rough for us. And I'm hoping they'll forgive us.
They've been very kind to us thus far. They've been very understanding of our very obvious and very glaring shortcomings in everything that we do.
We have shortcomings in everything that we do.
Yes. But don't worry, in conlanging the shortcomings is all of them. Messing up our stuff with terrible poll responses.
You know, at some point you need to take responsibility for the fact that you put those responses on there to give them the choice.
Yeah, I suppose so. And so begins a new season on Thursday of more exciting choices to be made by us and others. Everybody's listening to this knows, but indeed, season 7 is starting on Thursday. Very exciting, because this is going to be the end of our small first expansion for Sovala. We are introducing beavers and foxes and moving on to the next one after this one. But not only that, it'll be our first a posteriori conlang. What are we talking about?
I don't know. You
told me to
sit down and start talking with you.
Oh, yeah. No, sorry. First a posteriori conlang, it's going to be based on the same, developing proto-language as Hauhof, our dog language, because the idea is that the confederated dog clans originally had a clan of foxes who broke away early and potentially... also wolves and wolverines.
Oh.
Who would have broken off earlier. That's the ones I'm thinking, right? That's wolves and wolverines, I think so. Maybe coyotes. I don't know. And so we're going to be working with that proto-language to develop a sister language of... What's it?
Hauhof.
Yeah. Hauhof will have a sister language. Very interested to see how it works, because... Hauhof is so very specific in some of the unique and interesting things that it does. It's going to be interesting to see how we diverge. Anyway.
Also going to be interesting to see what we do with that phonology, which was an insane starting phonology.
Gosh, you're right.
And
that's all right. It'll be a lot easier to dispense with it now, I think.
And I don't know what you mean by that, but I look forward to finding out starting Thursday.
Yeah. Anyway, there were two things that I wanted to do with this podcast, two unrelated things. And I think the first one will be a little easier, so we'll start there. So I had mentioned a couple of places that honoring the old goal system of Patreon. If we ever hit 65 patrons, we were going to start implementing some Conlang reviews for our patrons. And indeed, that is what we are going to do and devote some podcast time to it. Anyway, and so in order to do that, we need volunteers, of course, but we want to make it a little bit more specific. So a single Conlang is too big, really. So what I would like patrons to do is take a look at their various Conlangs and focus on one aspect of it, whether it is, say, your noun cases, orthography, by which I mean orthography, not romanization. The verbal morphology, something in the syntax, be it relative clauses, comparative constructions, whatever. And I would like you to come to us with one of three plans in mind. One is basically a show and tell. In other words, you have some feature of your Conlang that you would like to explicate and explore, and you kind of demonstrate how it works, and we'll, give you some space to do that, and then talk about it. Maybe go through, for example, some example translations to see how it works. Ask you some questions about it and just kind of give you some space to show something that you think is neat. So that's one. The other is actual review. In other words, you've created something, you're not sure how you feel about it, and so you would like to get feedback on it. And I think the distinction between show and tell and feedback is very important because often with show and tell, you don't necessarily want feedback. And so we only want you to bring stuff to us to receive feedback if that's what you really want. So, in other words, maybe, I don't know, maybe it's part of your noun cases. You feel pretty good about a couple of them, but not about the others, whether it's how they evolved or how they work or how they'll work with different, verbal strategies, whatever. Something like that, and something that we can go through in the course of an hour. And this is why, again, it's important to choose part of a Conlang, not the whole thing, because it's just too big, So that's number two. And then the third thing is if you have, again, some specific area of your Conlang that you have not explored, and you just want to take an hour and have the three of us kind of explore some ideas. In other words, basically do what we do on Lang Time, but with your language, and we will represent something more like the audience, because obviously it's your Conlang and so it's your decision, but we'll throw out ideas, we'll play with things. You know what, I'm jumping ahead of myself, I think. Sorry. Anyway, but yeah, so that is a third type of thing. Anyway, so and obviously you might do each one at different times with the same language or with different languages, doesn't matter which. I'm hoping we can kind of alternate the episode. So maybe we do show and tell 1 month, then we do feedback another month, and exploration, brainstorming the next month. Also be ideal to vary the conlangers under conlangs, but that really is entirely dependent on the volunteers we get. So in other words, like if you just if you know it's the third month and we're yet again working on Patrick's Conlang, then, and you complain about it, then we'll just say, well, then why haven't you come forward and recommended yourself? Anyway.
So in other words, Patrick is going to volunteer. Very good.
Oh, yeah. With the... It was Patrick's, right? It was the English one, right? For the...
Oh, the Framling?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was brilliant. That was brilliant. What a treat that one was. Anyway, so that is... that's kind of the first part. And I want to say to make sure that those episodes are done efficiently. Whatever we're going to be working on, we're going to need to see background information so that we're prepared to tackle it, you know. And maybe we'll summarize a little bit of it on the episode for those listening, but it's really more important for us so that, you know, we don't say, well, why don't you do this? And it's like, well, I can't do that because of this construction that you never heard about, you know. Anyway, so... That was the first part, important part of this podcast. And so for the rest, we've heard a lot from me, but we have just come back yesterday from a very long stay in England, longer stay than we intended, where we were on set for a film. Now, obviously, we can't tell you what the film is or any specific details about it, but this was really Jesse's first experience being on set, and really doing it all the way. Like I had been on set a couple of times before doing Bright, but like I've been on set for a couple of TV shows and I think for a film. And so I'd seen it, but it's not until you're actually working on it, you know, every single day where you really kind of start to feel what it's like. Anyway, and so I thought maybe we could discuss in a non-NDA violating way,
mm-hmm.
You know, how it was. And perhaps we can start with the fact that we came to that production sick and then just got sicker.
You went to the production sick. I got sick.
Oh, and then
after the fact.
And then I sickened you.
And then, yeah, it was... I mean, that part was rough. And in fact, like, I'm still dealing with stuff. And right now, I actually don't know even if I'm loud enough for the microphone. Because in my head, I'm shouting. I can't hear out of my right ear right now. And I feel like I'm absolutely yelling. And based on other people's reactions to hearing me speak... That is not the case. And so right now you may be adjusting your volume because I may be as quiet as a mouse. And all of that has to do with me getting sick. And let me tell you, it is quite exciting to not be able to hear as you're supposed to listen to dialogue and, you know, give feedback. It's exciting.
Yeah. So to start us off, there was something that there was something I explained to Jesse, which I think is definitely true of some productions, and was certainly true of the ones that I've been on. So I told Jesse that on a movie, right? There's this thing called a call sheet, which says the times when everybody is supposed to arrive. It also says things like what scenes are being shot that day, which cast are going to be involved, what the weather is, when sunrise and sunset is. and where you can get food, which stages are going to be used, and that whole bit, maps and things like that. But there is always a general crew call. And this general crew is basically, unless you have other information, this is when crew is supposed to show up. Because of union rules, after you wrap shooting, you can't start the day until a certain number of hours have passed. And so,
In other words, letting people sleep.
yeah. And so my actual experience was, if crew call for this is for Bright, if crew call on a Monday was 8 a.m., on Tuesday it would probably be 10 a.m., on Wednesday maybe 12:30 p.m., Thursday maybe 3 p.m., and on Friday sometimes as late as 6 p.m. because shooting would keep going until they wanted it to be done. And every single day it ran over, which meant that we had to start later the next day. And so that was my experience from Bright, which was the one thing I'd been on where I was there for several, days in a row and also several weeks in a row. And so I told Jessie about this experience and said that she should expect it. And instead, for the 2 weeks that we were there, the first crew call was 8 a.m. on Monday, and the crew calls thereafter were
8 a.m.
without fail.
It was always on time. And importantly for us, you all should know by now, we are not we don't tend to be up and working in the morning. And so it was quite the trip where we, set an alarm for 5:55 every morning. So that way we'd be up and ready for pickup to get to set by 8 a.m.
Every single day.
Every day.
There was even one day where they went into overtime, I think by an hour. And so I thought, well, at least we'll get to sleep in tomorrow. No, crew call was still at 8 a.m.
Yeah, I don't think they overshot their time by enough to have to invoke the later times. But yeah, so that was different from what David had led me to believe. But it's also, and I feel like you could imagine this, based on my understanding, it's sort of like walking into a classroom. It's like you don't really know what that class is going to be like until you understand the teaching style of the person at the front of the classroom. And so you could take, intro to biology with one professor, and then your friend is also taking intro to biology, and they have a completely different experience because it's, just absolutely different professors and teaching styles. And the same is true of working on movies. It really depends on who the director is and what their style is. Because what it comes down to is, that determines how things go on set is, their style. It runs the day. And so, just to say that while David had certain experiences, it's I guess not necessarily shocking to find out this production was different because it was, different person at the helm. And so yeah, it was cool to hear stories because I know like I picked up a lot of information just by listening to what people were saying with like, oh, this director does this, and that told me like, oh, that's not typical, that's not necessarily what you would expect on other sets. Because otherwise you wouldn't need to tell the people because they've been on many sets and they understand. And it's like you wouldn't need to say, this is how it goes. So anyway, all that is to say, no two set experiences I think would be exactly the same unless you're with the exact same director and well, it says it's still going. Unless you're with the exact same director, same, you know, crew, same everything. It's, I mean, it's still counting.
Yeah, you're right.
David's computer momentarily fell asleep, and
I've never seen it do that while we were recording.
And so that's what we were referring to right there. I feel like I'm slurring a little just because, like, I'm a little tired. And by little tired, I mean, like, I'm maybe kind of fighting wanting to close my eyes a lot more than I should.
Mm. Yeah, but I think that...
Jet lag.
I think that your impression of, or at least how you feel it sounds when you are slurring, is kind of like how you feel you sound when you're shouting.
Okay, so yeah, Dave was trying to give me notes. One of the things that I needed to do while we were working was to do recordings with professional equipment. So that way, basically, it was so that way when, you know, people are meant to be speaking to each other, they could hear dialogue in different voices. So that way they could kind of hear how things could play out mm-hmm. while multiple people are speaking. And so I was reading lines for recording. David had read lines. And in one particular line, David told me that I needed to shout, and I said I did, and he just looked at me. I guess I didn't shout, but
I don't think you physically can.
I mean, I don't know. I guess it depends on what decibel you need me to reach to count for shouting.
I feel like so I've used this analogy before with Arabic vowels and pharyngealized consonants, where if you can't pronounce a pharyngealized consonant, you can kind of mask it by changing the quality of the vowel. Because, like, you know, safara would be how you pronounce the non-pharyngealized one, and then the pharyngealized one would be something like safara, where it's pharyngealized, but also the vowel changes. And so to kind of, like, make it sound as if you're pronouncing the pharyngealized consonant, you just change the quality of the vowel. So when you shout, I feel like all you're doing is just tensing a little bit more. Mm. The actual decibel of your voice stays exactly the same. It's like, you know, if David is how it sounds when you're not shouting, then David... It's how it sounds when you're shouting. It's a little tenser in here. Yeah.
Anyway.
There were a number of things that occurred while we were there on set that were different from my experience, and some things that were a little baffling. One of the things Jesse alluded to, and so I wanted to talk about that and mention how strange I think it was. So, you know, like Jesse and I have been doing this now for 6 years. I've been doing this for 16 years, and some aspects of the job have changed, some have not. The one that hasn't really changed is that for every single line we translate, I do a recording of that line. I do it to MP3. It's not like a huge, it's not like, you know, a high quality recording, because it doesn't really need to be, right? It's just for the actors to listen to hear the pronunciation, to be able to emulate it. When we were on set, for some reason, the person who was doing sound wanted us to do high quality recordings so that I guess they could play them for the actors while they were on the set. I still don't understand why the original MP3s we recorded could not serve this function. It doesn't make much sense to me. It's like, no, they weren't, you know, they weren't WAV files. They weren't, you know, the IFF files or whatever. But they're not going to be used, you know, they're not going to be in the movie. So who cares? All you need to do is just to be able to hear them. That's it. But for that reason, a good chunk of time was spent with Jesse and I re-recording dialogue that I had already recorded. To get a higher, to get a higher quality recording. However, the space that we were given to get these higher quality recordings were a little trailer that was set next to a stage, and it was out in the street. And so while we were doing these recordings, we had to deal with, because there was a road there that went through the studio. We had to deal with very loud, very noisy trucks driving by that you could hear, and also people walking by chatting very loudly. And on the last day, it sounded like they were just tossing wood around. Like,
well, they very well may have been, because it was, you know, it was the last day of...
Last day of the week.
The week. Yeah. And so, you know, people were kind of packing things up more than they necessarily would have on a Tuesday or Wednesday. So I think it, yeah, it just ended up.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it was fine for me anyway, because it gave me extra time to practice.
Mm. And so, yeah, a lot of our time on set was spent doing that. Where I re-recorded a lot of the male lines, except for those that had been done. And Jesse, very graciously, recorded...
I'm not sure graciously is correct.
I mean, you did it. She recorded almost all of the female lines. There were only three that she didn't record. And maybe we'll get to that later. But I will say there is a lot of dialogue in this film. There's a lot of Conlang dialogue in this film. I'm sure that you've heard us mention before how usually in films, if they're going to feature a Conlang, usually it's just one. And they'll ask for eight lines and then actually film five of them, and then three of them will show up on screen and they'll probably be wrong. Something like Dune Part 2 was a huge exception. We did a ton of dialogue and almost all of it ended up on film. And I would say this film is the second most. I mean, next to Dune Part 2, really.
I mean, assuming everything moves forward, and
I mean, even if it doesn't, in terms of like what we had to do.
Oh, in terms of, yeah.
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 So not only was it a lot of dialogue, but the dialogue itself is quite long, in spots. There are, you know, your share of, you know, get him and run over there, you know, lines, but there's also some very long, in some cases, like hilariously long lines where you look at it and it's like, you've got to be kidding me.
You know, it is funny though, because funny is the wrong word, but so many times people ask us a lot of questions about you know, different features of the language, whenever we talk to fans of, you know, shows or movies that we've worked on, and they want to know, like, sort of some more intricate details of the language. And there are so many times when it's like, well, we didn't actually go into that because we never needed to, because literally all we were translating was, commands. Because I want to say 70% of what we usually translate ends up being a command. Because a lot of it ends up being in action scenes and it ends up being do this, do that, hey. And so like that feels like a more very typical thing for what we need to do. And so things like dialectal variation don't show up when all you're hearing is one character and all they're ever doing is yelling. And so like I think it's really cool when you end up getting to work on something like Dune or something like this, where you get a variety of people in a variety of stations of life. And you do. It is very challenging because the like anyone who is working on a conlang relay translation right now, it does get very challenging when suddenly you look at a big block of text and realize, you need to figure out how you're going to make this all come out in your language in a way that sort of not only works for your language, but maintains the original spirit of what was being said in the first place. And so it is a very big challenge to do those things. And very exciting then when we get to for translation purposes for what is intended to go on screen. I think it's very exciting. That was it. I was just
No,
saying it was
I know.
exciting.
I was just thinking about a very specific instance where we were translating one of these lines, and one of the verbs ended up being in some tense, and then I said it out loud, and I was like, I hate that. And so we changed it.
Just one instance. You don't
There
remember
is,
more?
there was at least, I mean, there was, it was the specific one where we changed the verb tense
Well,
just because that we're
and I gotta say that is
so bad.
something, we talk about sound changes in conlanging, and we talk about having all these principled sort of like they're ordered, you're able to like apply them and see input output. But one thing we don't talk about as much that maybe we should talk about more openly are that there are definitely changes that are made for aesthetic reasons. And there are, in a language that David and I have recently worked on, there are a number of forms that by the time they come together as a whole unit, in this language, native speakers would shift it. Just because there are certain forms that are kind of difficult to get out all in one go, and forms that maybe you just wouldn't necessarily prefer. And so sometimes what that means are the, with natural language progression, sometimes what that means are those forms just fall out entirely. Like, there are entire paradigms where it's like you just never see a certain particular form of a verb, and it's really, you can't really explain why. But other times, it just sort of the extra sound changes apply in certain cases where there's really no rhyme or reason other than people liked it better that way. And that's something that you have to deal with because, like, when you're conlanging, I think it can be so difficult when you put together a unit and suddenly you feel a little dispirited because it's like, oh my gosh, I don't like how this one thing sounds. And yet, there are plenty of forms in English where it's like, I'm like, eh, I don't love the sound, don't hate the sound, it's just, eh, it's just sound. But then there are also other forms, especially when I'm learning other languages, I can identify those where I'm like, oh, I hate saying that because like it's a mouthful and I have to remember it's tarjolia.
Oh, Tarjolia.
There we go.
Tarjolia.
And it's like, it's like you have to like really focus on how to make your mouth move around these sounds. And so, sure, like a native speaker is going to like just get used to it and say, yeah, that's just how it works in the language, and they're going to be able to say it no problem. But then there are other units where it's like, no, I think even a native speaker would smooth this out over time because it is sort of a clunker in the middle. But like, that's gonna happen. Like, no matter what, when you create, there's no way you can create an entire language and be 100% happy with the way every single form in the language comes together in every possible construction. And so David, remembers these moments where they come out and he goes, ugh, I hate that. But it's like you hated one word out of, 100. And there were a lot of other really cool sounding things, and there were.
So I will say this. I will take responsibility when it's something that was done very poorly. And I think these verbs are terrible. I think they're terrible. I think the nouns are pretty good, honestly. I think they're lovely. I think the verbs are awful. Top to bottom, every tense, every person number combination. They're terrible. Just awful.
Well,
And
there you have it.
I did the verbs. I did them all. It was all me. I should have gotten you to take a look at them. I should have gotten you to try to pronounce them. I think that would have been enough to for me to maybe think for a moment, maybe this needs another level of lenition. Because maybe with another level of lenition it would have been okay. As it is, it's terrible.
Well, in a future version of this
It could
language,
be very nice.
that I think it would naturally Lenite, and I think we may see that language evolution in progress. I'm very interested in seeing how it's performed on screen, and so they may have taken care of that for you, David.
Yeah, because that's so much dialogue. There's so much. And it's all back and forth. It's too much. I shouldn't say that, but
It's not too much. It is
it's not too much,
really
but
perfect for the scenes and for what is needed, and we are very, very excited to see how it goes. It was when David's saying it's too much, like he just means that, as it's so hard to describe, and it's like it's really, unless you've tried to do it yourself. It's a very surreal experience memorizing a chunk of something in a language that you don't know. And not only in a language that you don't know, but that it's in a language that you can't readily find speakers to help you. And so, for instance, if I were to decide I'm going to memorize a chunk of something in Japanese, I would find it very difficult, but I could also find people to help me. I could find people to say, I don't know this and I'm not learning the language. I just need to know how to say this thing. And I could work with them and go back and forth. When you're working in a constructed language situation, you don't have that. And so, like, your only direct access to language feedback is to the language creators, really. And, outside of that, it's like you don't really have a community to turn to. So there's like interesting little twist, number one. But number two is that when you're memorizing a whole chunk, one little syllable goes wrong as you're reciting it, and it can trigger your brain to think you're on a completely different line, and you won't know the difference because you don't actually know the language. And so it'd be like stopping midway in one English word and then picking up with a completely different word, like halfway through of like a preamble that you had memorized and like not realizing you had missed an entire chunk in between. Things like that can happen. Syllables can start to metathesize quite a bit. You can perform it 5 times in a row. That's another thing with acting. Like, you've got to be ready to say the line not once, not twice, but like as many times as the director wants you to say it, for them to get different angles, for them to get different takes, different props, different whatever. And it gets hard. Like, your memory for things, like you can start off strong, but you know, on the 15th take, are you going to be just as strong and not accidentally ad-libbing a little bit with these syllables that you know you've memorized as a unit? And so yeah, it's just if you want to know what it's like to have a big dialogue in a conlang, pick up a chunk of a conlang you don't know yourself and memorize it and see how that goes.
Something else that was unique for this director, and this wasn't just me, several others remarked on this as well, is how infrequently there were total resets. That is, when you're shooting a scene, right, it's, there's action. You do whatever is happening. You get to the end of it. The director usually says cut or something, or, something to end it. You stop. You go back to the original position. People will come in. Like if makeup needs retouching, they'll come in. But it's also, that's the point where other support staff can come in. And so that would be the point where somebody like me would come in to help if they've forgotten a line or something. This director just keeps going and going and going. Rarely cuts and does a reset. That's something that, in fact, that I've rarely seen where they would call reset while it, but they'd still be rolling. And so it would be a reset, but everybody had to stay quiet. Nobody could come in because they were still rolling. They were still like, it was a different take, but they just didn't stop rolling. And I think that if this was a film where it was all in English, and the actors really understood the scene and everything, I think that works very, very well. And I think that we, Jesse and I, saw that too, because there were a number of scenes that we saw that didn't have, any non-English language in it. And so there were a number of times that they were able to get, different jokes in there, slightly different reads, and get them all very, very quickly. Without a, camera stopping and people getting up, moving around, doing this and that, and blah, blah, blah. So it's cool because they could kind of stay in the moment. But the problem that I noticed is that, especially with conlang dialogue, there were two things. So Jesse mentioned when you make a mistake, right? It can cause you to screw up where you're at. The other thing that I noticed, and I've noticed this with myself as well, if you make one mistake and you notice it, you're liable to start making other mistakes. It's just like if you're running a race and suddenly there's one small little stumble, and then suddenly your next foot isn't landing in exactly the right place, and then suddenly a very, very small mistake leads to a big disaster. This is something that carries over. And so it's like you make this small mistake and you're thinking about it, and you've made another mistake as you're
thinking about
as
that.
you, as you're thinking about that and moving on, and then you're thinking about that one. And without like a full reset to stop and think about, you know, hey, what was the line? Where did I make my mistake? And this is how it goes. Do a little practice. It can actually carry over again and again. And so these would be like, you know, different takes, quote unquote, but still the same, you know, role. And it would be the same mistake over and over again. And it would actually kind of get progressively worse. We will see.
we'll see
what comes out of it.
It'll be, I think it'll be very interesting. But yeah, when I will say though, it was really cool to be able to work with as many people as we were able to work with. And it was really cool to see the number of people who were excited, to be working with a Conlang for the situation that they were in. And so like that was really neat because, you know, you never know what you're going to get. And it was very exciting to be able to work with everyone. When I was able to be on set, cause after I got sick, I needed to stay away from set, for a bit, because the last thing you want to do is get all the actors sick. Or anyone sick who has close contact with all of the actors.
It wasn't just us, by the way, like everybody was sick.
There were a lot of people who were sick, and that was why I got sick. And so, yeah, that was rough, but, it was a really cool experience.
I was grateful too, because of course, Jesse's first major onset experience was, you know, we were brought to the set of Dune, for Dune Part 2, but we were there before filming got started. A couple of the actors did arrive later on, but we never saw them. We never saw any of the actual sets.
No.
Yeah. And so it was a bizarre experience. We were there, but not really there. This time we were, very much like on the set in Dune. We had an office, and something that looked very much like an office building. Yeah. And that was kind of our home base, which was really nice. But I mean, at the same time though, the film was filming, there was a set, we knew where it was, we were welcome to be there. They were happy to have us there. We were fully a part of the crew, and had access to really any cast who was there and wanted to talk to us. And in fact, even if they weren't there, because we met with a number of the cast in person, but also, even though we were there, we ended up doing Zoom sessions with the cast as well. This studio we're at is out of the way, in terms of like it's not close to London, and it's hard to appreciate that until you're there, because in terms of the miles, it's not very far. But I think that's thinking with a car mentality, where you know, here in the United States, they just fall all over themselves to make things easy for cars. Whereas like there, it's like the opposite. They make it easier for trains, you know, and things become much more difficult for cars. And so even if you're kind of nearby, you're not actually nearby. And of course, the way that these films work is, this is like, I don't know, you might think about it, it's like all of these people are in the film, and so they're all, you know, there, and everybody's just lives there while they film it, but it's not the case, certainly. Some of them aren't even in the country, because maybe they only have a handful of scenes, and they're going to have them film all at the same time, and so there were a few cast members that we never saw because they hadn't even been to the set yet. And then there were some that had, you know, came in even though they weren't filming because they were trying on their costumes, doing makeup tests, taking photos, things like that. But then outside of that, then they would just be in, wherever they were staying, whether it was in London or somewhere else further away. So that was cool though. So Jesse got to meet with actual cast and had the experience that I have had for, I mean, the vast majority of my career whenever interacting with cast, which is that, it's a tough thing to recite lines in a con lang. It's difficult, but they're all up for it. They're putting as much work in as they can, and they're grateful to see us. And that's such a nice thing,
Agree.
All right. So this is also Jesse's first experience with craft services, yeah.
Well, craft or crafty?
Both.
Well, I don't know. It's 'cause that one cafeteria we ate at
No,
on Dune.
that wasn't craft services.
Okay.
No. That was the thing. We weren't allowed to go to craft services. We had to go to that.
Anyway, so yes, it was my first experience then.
And I guess I didn't explain this well enough, but yeah, they fill you up.
Oh yeah, they serve a lot of food.
And you never saw breakfast.
I couldn't even, if I wanted to, it would too much.
And it's like, it's just as big.
Like, yeah, too
Can
much.
you imagine like eating two of those a day?
No. Like, just to give you an idea, we went in for our lunch and what they gave me for lunch, I would eat some of it there and I would bring the rest back to the office. I would eat more of it for dinner, and sometimes I got close to finishing what they gave me for lunch after, for dinner. Other times it's like it was too much food to even finish for both meals. And yeah, and that was just like the food that was given.
Yeah, they have these guys that work behind the counter. They're the ones that actually fill up your thing. So whereas if we were doing it on our own, might be like, well, I'll take a small bit of that just to fill it
They make sure you get a serving.
There was this one guy, I remember that was the day that there was there was mushy peas and there was also regular peas. So I got some mushy peas, and he says, any veg? And I'm like, well, I want some peas, but you think maybe you could put them on top of the mushy peas? He said, I've done it before then, haven't I? Man. Anyway. But so craft services is a stable tent that is set up where there are two meals that are always served, breakfast and lunch. And breakfast is always an hour and a half before crew call, and lunch is always I think 4 hours after crew call. And so for us it was, breakfast was always at 6:30 and lunch was always at 12. But like that one day where literally crew call for Bright was 6 p.m., I arrive at like 5:30 and they're serving breakfast and lunch was at 10. Oh, anyway, but it's this tent stays up and it's that's all they do. They serve those two big meals. When they're not serving those meals, there is a smaller thing that is called Crafty, and it's a little pop-up tent that is somewhat near the stage, and so it moves around, and they serve drinks and little snacks. And it varies, you know, from production to production. And usually, at least once a day, they serve a kind of hot snack too. Man, one day on Bright, they had these dumplings. God, they were so I put on some weight that production. It was so good. It was so good. Oh, no wonder we all loved it. It was such a blast. They just spent money on us and spoiled us. It was terrible. Loved it. Anyway, crafty was a fun thing. I didn't really drink coffee when I was on Bright
Yeah, you missed
at
out.
all. And so when we showed up in the morning, we would go and get our coffees. And it got to the point where like the first thing that happened is that I could write up the order for them because I figured out their code. But then last day, Jessie shows up. She didn't even have to order it. They had it ready for us because they knew that Jesse would have three double shot Americanos. They were small cups. They were small cups. And in stark contrast to that, I would have my, iced latte with a double shot of caramel. And that would be our morning. Yeah. It was very, very nice. And later in the day, they had a juice bar there. What was I supposed to do? I'm only human. But there were a limited, kind of an odd number of fruits there. Most people, I think, got like these chili shots or whatever. But I found this combination: strawberry, watermelon, and mint.
Now, I do want to say it wasn't
So
that you
good.
found it. It was given to you because that was one of the suggestions.
No.
Now, that day, that first day when you were like, "Whoa, I could have anything," and he suggested.
I don't know about that.
Okay.
I saw strawberry and watermelon, and then maybe he suggested the mint.
Okay.
Maybe he suggested the mint. But it was so good. So I got that many, many times. I'd like the drink named after me.
The David,
Oh.
the linguist, that's what they'll call it.
Oh, brother. Yeah. Anyway, so nearing the end here. But
Yes.
yeah.
Which is good because I feel like I'm literally sinking down into the couch and like I'm fighting yawns left and right
You're doing
and
great.
ready to curl up and call it a night.
You're doing great. Just finish this off and then we'll review this and then we'll record the real version.
Excellent.
There
I'll be fast asleep.
we go. All right. But yeah. Anything else stand out to you? Anything else you wanted to mention about, your first real onset experience?
No, not that I can think of that doesn't. This is really hard actually because it's like you can't give details. And so I feel like I haven't said anything at all for an hour. Because it just all feels very vague. And so no,
I felt pretty good.
I can't think of anything to add to it.
Well, then, on an entirely different note, I'll mention that we got a chance to visit with Jake and Bibliridian and Karis again. And what a joy that was. Neither of us were feeling very good, which was a shame,
Yeah.
but it was just such a lovely time. We were introduced to the famous English sandwich shop, Greggs.
David just started a war there. It's not a sandwich shop.
It's not a sandwich shop. They mainly serve pastries and other baked goods. But it was good anyway. But yeah. I really enjoy hanging out with all of them. It was a shame that Sovala 3.0 wasn't ready, because it would have been nice to play with all of them, but that just gives us an excuse to come back. Yeah. And then we can all take in an English football match as well.
Some footy.
That's right. We went by the Watford FC stadium. They have a moose. They have a moose on their coat of arms.
Moosling.
Yeah. Oh, moosling. There are moose in Canada.
There we go.
They are large mammals,
They are
though,
very
and they
large.
are large mammals, and I wanted to stick to the small mammals. What happened to the large mammals? These are questions I don't want to answer. I just
Okay.
want to focus on the things that I like, Jesse.
Fair enough. All right, David, let's put a bow on this.
All right.
Thank you for being here. Thank you, David, for running the show for episode 60.
Thanks for humoring me, Jess. I appreciate it.
And to all you listeners out there, get your volunteer forms in.
That's right.
We want you. This
Yeah.
is the official call.
Yeah, use the we have a LinkedIn chat channel, right?
You mean,
In Discord.
no, we do have a podcast ideas channel.
That was it. That's the one. Thank you. Podcast Ideas channel. Tag us there. I know Jake has already tagged us. I think Jake was the first, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so Jake, you'll absolutely be first up. Think about it with the framework that we laid out here, and yeah, everybody else after that. It's open. It's open season. Fair game.
Excellent.
All right.
Well, until next time or until Thursday,
right on.
stay grammar.
Bye, everybody.